It's Daniel chapter 6. It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom, with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them, so that the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. At this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, these men said, "We will never find any basis for charges against this man Daniel unless it has something to do with the law of his God." So the administrators and the satraps went as a group to the king and said, "O King Darius, live forever. The royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisers and governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or man during the next 30 days, except to you, O king, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Now, O king, issue the decree and put it into writing so that it cannot be altered, in accordance with the laws of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed." So King Darius put the decree in writing. Now, when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room, where the windows opened towards Jerusalem. Three times a day he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. Then these men went as a group and found Daniel praying and asking God for help. So they went to the king and spoke to him about his royal decree. "Did you not publish a decree that during the next 30 days anyone who prays to any god or man except to you, O king, would be thrown into the lion's den?" The king answered, "The decree stands in accordance with the laws of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed." Then they said to the king, "Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or to the decree you put in writing. He still prays three times a day." When the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. He was determined to rescue Daniel and make every effort until sundown to save him. Then the men went as a group to the king and said to him, "Remember, O king, that according to the laws of the Medes and Persians, no decree or edict that the king issues can be changed." So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve, continually rescue you." A stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the rings of his nobles, so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night without eating and without any entertainment being brought to him, and he could not sleep. At the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue from the lions?" Daniel answered, "O king, live forever. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouth of the lions. They have not hurt me because I was found innocent in his sight. Nor have I ever done any wrong before you, O king." The king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him because he had trusted in his God. At the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den, along with their wives and children. And before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. Then King Darius wrote to all the peoples, nations, and men of every language throughout the land, "May you prosper greatly. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, and he endures forever, and his kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions." Daniel is quite an amazing person, really. He's one of the very few people in the Bible who gets a write-up and nothing negative is said about him. He was ripped away from home and family and taken off to the foreign land of Babylon, wasn't he? A different culture, a different way of life, different food, different beliefs and values. Things that must have pained his heart many times over. And yet Daniel went on to live a life that commanded the respect of everyone. And commanded the respect especially of the rulers of that land. He rose through the ranks of the civil service. He was put in charge of advisors to the king. Quite a hodgepodge of people, weren't they? Soothsayers and sorcerers and wizards and magicians and people with all kinds of crackpot ideas and dangerous ideas and things that he must have violently disagreed with, but actually he was put in charge of them to manage them. I mean, imagine being given that job. And yet, he did it. He made a success of it. I find that incredible. And he made a success of it without compromising his own faith. That's a marvelous testimony of anyone, isn't it? And we find from this story here, you know, he made no secret of the fact that he worshipped the true God. They all knew it. And it was something they could depend on. He didn't tone down anything of his practice in serving God and worshipping the true God. And that was, of course, what the enemy, that his enemies were able to rely on. And yet, he consistently drew the admiration, the respect, the trust of those who ruled that land. So how did he do it? How did he manage to do that? Well, there was one thing that was said about Daniel, the assessment of others, especially those who ruled over him. They said that he was one in whom the spirit of the gods dwelt. Well, that was how they understood it. They didn't really know any better, did they? They knew that there was something special about Daniel. There was something there in the man that wasn't in other people. But Daniel himself was quite clear that it wasn't him. Whatever he was able to share, dreams that he was able to crack open or whatever, that was because there was a God in heaven. Daniel was very clear about that. But they recognized there was something different about Daniel's life. And others could see it. Now, I think it also fantastic to recognize that by this stage, Daniel would have been in his 80s. Now, Dave Greaves mentioned that last week. And it's true, if you calculate it and work out how long the children of Israel were to be in Babylon and so on, Daniel would have been most likely in his 80s. He could have been even older. And this is the testimony of that man. And this is the life he was living at that age. Now, you'd have thought it would have been quite okay for him at this stage to kind of ease off a bit, wouldn't you, really? You could have easily have heard people saying to Daniel, look, mate, you know, the king's made this decree, but nobody's expecting you at your age to go and put your life in danger. Come on, you know, it's time to just let the pedal go a bit and tone it down a bit. I mean, you've made your mark, you've made your point. Surely he had every reason to slow down and let things go a bit, but not Daniel. The king makes his decree, persuaded by these satraps and administrators and all the rest of them, not realizing, I don't think, what he was really doing and the implications of it. What's Daniel's response to that? Well, it's to go straight home at his normal time and get those windows open and pray. No secret there. It was an upper room. I mean, they were going to see him as easily as anything. Nothing hidden in what Daniel was doing. And those accusers of his, those who were trying to trip him up, they were there, ready and waiting, watching for him, because they knew he'd do it. And they went straight back to the king and told on him. There's a couple of interesting things here, really, I think, that are illustrations for us that we can pick up on the way through this story. Because when the king heard that news that Daniel had gone straight off to pray and now he was going to be condemned by the king's law, it threw the king into quite a dilemma, didn't it? Actually, he really liked Daniel. He was grief-stricken that he was going to have to do this to Daniel, and so he basically played for time so that he could have an opportunity, try and work out a solution to stop Daniel having to be thrown into the lion's den. But he couldn't. The reason was that they'd made a law, and by the laws of the Medes and Persians, which can never be repealed, you can't go back on it. The law was made, it stayed forever. Now, I find that interesting because, in the first place, it starts to show us that when Daniel brought that prophecy to Nebuchadnezzar about that huge statue, it was already beginning to be fulfilled in Daniel's lifetime. If you remember the prophecy, the statue had a head of gold, it had a silver was the next part of the body, then it was bronze, and then it worked its way down to the feet of a mixture of iron and clay. And really the prophecy was saying that Nebuchadnezzar would be the strongest, most powerful leader with the most powerful empire, but gradually as each empire or each country took rule, it would deteriorate bit by bit. And so we see that already happening. Whereas Nebuchadnezzar could just order someone's execution at will, that wasn't so easy for Darius. For a start, if he made kind of a law or a decree, he had to consult his advisors. We saw that in the book of Esther. When Vashti refused to come to the feast, Artaxerxes, the Persian king, he had to consult his advisors as to what to do about it. So there was the first bit of decline in power. Nebuchadnezzar could basically not worry about laws and things. He was the law. He said, and it had to be done. Not so the rulers of the Medes and Persians.
And once they'd made a law, of course, that law could never be repealed. And again, we found that in the book of Esther. Haman's law that said that there was a massacre of the Jews on a certain date, that couldn't be taken away, even when Haman was executed for having made the law. The law still stood. The only way they could get around it was to make another edict that gave the Jews the opportunity to defend themselves when that law came into effect. And so we find the same here. Darius's hands are tied. Here he is with a dilemma. And here he is with a law that he cannot go back on. What does he do about it? Well, he, of course, is powerless. He cannot do anything but actually make Daniel pay the penalty. Now, I find that interesting because it illustrates to me a bit of something of a spiritual law. And I say this reverently, but in a sense, God's hands are tied. God has that same kind of dilemma, doesn't he? There is a law that says sin has to be punished. The wages of sin is death. There is a sense, really, in which that if God himself does not see that law happen, then God himself is no longer just as a holy and righteous God. Here's something God himself cannot go back on. And if God goes back on it in some way, if God denies that justice, then he's not true to himself. And if God, the holy God, ceases to actually be holy in every 100%, then I don't know what would happen. To be honest, I think the whole universe would burst and just explode in on itself. Because he keeps the thing going anyway. So what does God do about it? Because God has that dilemma out of love for you and me, doesn't he? God has to ensure that law is obeyed and that punishment is carried out. And you know, there was an answer to that. And God found an answer. God found an answer for Daniel. Daniel actually paid the penalty, didn't he? He went into the lion's den and he was delivered by the grace and the power of God. Well, the dilemma was resolved by God through his own son, isn't he? Jesus actually went and paid the penalty for you and me. That was God's answer, not for us to pay that penalty, but for Jesus himself to pay that penalty. But can you imagine that circumstance of the Son of God there? Not in the lion's den. Can you imagine him? Have you seen The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe? The cartoon version is really quite graphic. Years ago I saw this, so I don't know whether they've made a more modern one, but the sight of Aslan, the lion, going to the place where he's to be sacrificed, and he's surrounded by all these grotesque animals and all jeering and laughing at him and licking their lips and drooling over the fact that he is going to his death. And it pictures something of what Christ went through to pay the penalty for us. Not mere lions, but really the evil forces of hell looking down on the Son of God, hungry, seeking to devour him. But the Holy One will not let his Son see corruption, will he? And God delivers Jesus. Well, that's something in passing. What's interesting is the fact there are a few little insights there. Back to Daniel. Why did Daniel go on praying, do you think, in the face of this edict? I mean, he was in his 80s, as I say. I mean, he could have eased off and nobody would have blamed him for that. Was it mere habit? Was it the fact that he prayed 3 times a day and he couldn't really stop himself? I think there was more to it than that. Was he such a religious person that he had to go on? Well, I think there are other things going on in Daniel's heart, and they are indicated here in this story. For a start, I think that Daniel's allegiance was, of course, to God before anyone else. And I think in Daniel's mind, he didn't see really why any mere man should take precedence over the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. Now, Daniel's own name actually means God is my judge. And that's good, isn't it? God is my judge. And that characterized his life in reality. He lived out what his name stood for in that sense. Because he didn't see himself as answerable really to anyone else but God. Yes, he served earthly kings. But the constant message that comes through the book of Daniel is that actually God is in charge. You might throw my servants into fires, you might put them into dens, but actually I'm in charge and I will say what happens to them in the long run. God's message to Nebuchadnezzar in turning him mad was that God gives him power to rule and that he needs to acknowledge that. And so here's Daniel. And that's Daniel's life. God is in charge. God is the ruler. And I'm not answerable to anybody else. But of course, Daniel served faithfully out of a heart for God to do the job as he should have done. But there is a kind of freedom in that, isn't there? To know that actually, it's not the pressure of men, it's not the words of others, it's not the expectations that are laid upon us ultimately that we have to live to. God is our judge. There's a freedom in that. There's also a cost. And Daniel put his life on the line more than once in order to live out that kind of life. But the fact is, really, that he wouldn't have been the person he was if he hadn't taken that stance. I'm convinced of that. He wouldn't have been the character he was and been able to do what he did in his life and commanded the respect that he had if he wasn't like that. Because that's what made him. That's what gave him that accolade, that the spirits of God was there in him. So God was the one that he lived for before anyone else. In the second place, too, I think he knew that prayer was so vital to being who he was and doing the things that he did. I think he knew that 30 days without prayer to his God would have weakened Daniel. I wonder how you and I would fare without 30 days prayer. I mean, as the saying goes, even 7 prayerless days make 1 week, don't they? The old ones are the best ones, aren't they? But he knew the need of prayer in his life. I mean, it was John Wesley that said, wasn't it, I have so much to do in a day that I must spend several hours in prayer before I start to do it. Because he knew the importance of prayer for all that he achieved. And surely if Jesus often took himself off to prayer, what does that say about prayer for us as well? Prayer is vital to being who we are and who we need to be. In the third place, I think his prayer life was too real. It was too vibrant to miss it out for even one day. let alone 30. I get the impression that Daniel must have probably lived in anticipation of getting home and flinging his windows open and kneeling down before God. So we're not talking about saying prayers here. It doesn't say that Daniel went home and said his prayers. It said Daniel prayed. And you get an idea of Daniel's prayer life, don't you, in the rest of his book. I mean, he grappled with the dreams of kings, with the threat of death hanging over him. Well, I don't think you go and get and say your prayers under those circumstances, do you? I think Daniel learned to really pray. And later chapters of this book show that when Daniel prayed, he engaged with God. He expected answers, and God responded. And prayer for Daniel was an encounter with God. It was Daniel reaching out to God and looking for answers and expecting to get them. He went to God with a real sense of purpose in his praying. We may not see the same drama as Daniel saw in his prayers, but I believe we can still have the same sense of encounter. Because after all, are we not coming before the same God? Is not this the living God? The God who Daniel proved. How would we be if we had 30 days without prayer? But then I asked myself, what did he pray that was actually so vital that he couldn't stop praying for 30 days? Even though he knew he'd be put into the lion's den as a result. Well, what it tells us here is that when Daniel went home to pray, he opened his windows towards Jerusalem. Now, that wasn't mere ritual. Back in 2 Chronicles chapter 7. We read Solomon's dedication prayer in the temple, when the temple was first built. Solomon's prayer, you remember it. It's about seeking the face of God, isn't it? It's about when the people of Israel might turn their backs on God and turn away from him in the future, and they seek his face and pray. And in that prayer, Solomon says that if in that time, if they are taken captives, if they should turn towards this place, i.e. the temple, and pray to you, then hear. Lord, answer. Lord, deliver them. And that's what Daniel was doing, isn't it? Daniel was fulfilling what he knew Solomon had prayed. He saw that word of God and he was kneeling down with his face towards Jerusalem, and surely he was beseeching God for the deliverance of the people of God in Babylon. Daniel had business with God that couldn't wait 30 days. Daniel regarded that as far more important than any decree of the king. He was looking for the fulfillment of God's purpose for his people. He was going to God and saying, your word tells me this. And he was pursuing God for that word to be carried out. That's the kind of praying that Daniel was doing. And in the grand scheme of God's purposes, what's a king's decree to stick someone in the lion's den? It's a blip along the way, isn't it? When you're thinking about I can be there praying to God about the destiny of God's people in this world. Daniel was seeking the face of God. It also says here in verse 10 of chapter 6 that Daniel was giving thanks to his God. Giving thanks, because that was his normal practice. So I mean, that's pretty sensational in a way, isn't it? Because this is Daniel's response. He knows that the king has decreed that anyone who prays to anyone else other than Darius himself is going to get put into the lion's den. And with that in his mind, he comes and he gives thanks to God. Can you imagine it? I find that quite amazing. It was not a complaining prayer. It wasn't a moaning prayer. Lord, what's happening to me now? He was giving thanks to God. What could Daniel be thanking God for under these circumstances? Thank you, Lord, for putting me in this situation. Because it means I shall really have to trust you. It's going to stretch me spiritually. But I'm really quite glad that this has happened. That would be pretty courageous prayer to pray. I don't know whether he was praying that sort of prayer. But I suppose he could be. Here, Lord, you have an opportunity to show yourself greater than any man, even the most powerful man on the earth at the moment. The Bible tells us that we should give thanks in everything, doesn't it? Give thanks to God in everything. And one sure sign of faith is that we can actually thank God for the answers that he's going to give. Even when you're still waiting for it. Perhaps that was Daniel. Perhaps that was Daniel going to God and saying, look, Lord, you've said, it's there in your word, this is the prayer. You responded to Solomon's prayer. You said you would give that commitment. So I want to thank you, Lord, that in spite of what the king has just said, I know you're going to deliver us. I want to thank you, Lord, for that deliverance you promised us when we turn to you. After all, if someone promises something, you do say thank you straight away, don't you? Don't you? Someone says to you, I promise I will do that. You say to them, oh, thank you very much for that, don't you? Well, isn't it right that we go to God and we say, yes, Lord, you promised that. Well, thank you, Lord, for that. I don't know. I'm trying to see what Daniel might have been praying. But certainly he was giving thanks under these circumstances. And the next thing it says about him in verse 11 is that he was asking help of his God. Now that does suggest to me that Daniel wasn't actually just sailing through this without a thought. It does suggest that Daniel knew things were pretty dire. No, he probably wasn't finding it easy to be real. He probably wasn't feeling that he was up to the challenge of it entirely. He knew he needed God, but his faith was in God. And that's backed up by Hebrews chapter 11, which lists off to us the people who look to God in faith, doesn't it? And gives those wonderful examples of different people. And right in there, at one point it says that it was faith that stopped the mouths of lions. So there you go. Proof that Daniel had faith and God stopped those lions' mouths in response to Daniel's prayer of faith, I would guess. Daniel was, I'm sure, in the midst of all that, entrusting himself to God, doing what Peter says that we should be doing in circumstances where we're under trial. Because it was something that Jesus did as an example to us. to commit ourselves as unto a faithful Creator, one who is able to deliver, one who, like his friend said, well, even if God doesn't deliver us from the fire, we ain't going to bow to you. Because ultimately, we know that we're better off trusting God anyway. Well, there you go. Daniel was a man of prayer. And he knew that he could not give up his prayer for one day, because he needed that time with God. And that God responded in power to him. Does God work in ways like that these days? Well, I don't know. I know, I remember a few years ago, it was quite a few years ago, sitting listening to Helen Roosevelt. I don't know whether you know the name. Missionary doctor in the Congo, and she was describing some of her experiences. And she told of one particular incident when she was in the mission centre where she worked. And in that centre there was not only a hospital, there was also a school. And it was during the time of the rebellion going on in the Congo. And they knew in that centre there that if the rebel soldiers should come, the children's lives were in danger. Or I guess the children would probably have been taken off to serve the rebels in some way. And so they devised a plan that if they should hear that the rebels were coming into the area, that they would take the children away without letting the children know what was happening, into the jungle, out of the way, to somewhere safe where they wouldn't be known. And that's what happened. And Helen herself was still in her home when the door knocked, and there at the door was a rebel soldier captain. On one side he had a man with a spear, on the other a man with a rifle. And he said to her, "Tell me where those children are." And she refused. Obviously she didn't want to let know because of the safety of them. And he got very strong with her, he threatened her with all sorts of things, and she still refused to tell. He turned to the man with the gun and he said to him, "Strike her down with the butt of your gun." And the man raised his gun high and then tried to bring it down and just could not move. So he turned to the man with the spear and he said to him, "Put your spear into her." And the man raised his spear and tried to thrust it into her, and nothing happened. He was stuck. And the captain stood there with these two men, immobilized, commanding them to do something which they couldn't obey. And in the end, he told them to follow him, and he stormed off, and they left the area. That's God. I know that was a few years ago, but it was a lot of years after Daniel. God can do things that we can't. And God responds when we go to him in prayer.